environmentally sound for your mind. HRNradio.com.
Welcome, everyone. This is Lionel Ketching with Dr. Bernie Siegel, another Healthy Life discussion. We welcome you all. Bernie, how are you doing? I know sometimes you answer that question in a very funny way.
Well, you know, because I can't just say to people, fine. It that's not me. You know what I mean? I feel like I'm lying. And so when people say, how you doing? It doesn't mean I may not be doing all right, but that doesn't mean I don't have my hands full also. And I'd like to be doing better. I loved one guy who, you know, when I was saying to people, introduce yourselves in our cancer support group.
Yes.
He said, I'm here, but I'm not all there.
Wow. Wow, you know? That's interesting.
And I think that's kind of the feeling I have. I'm here, and I think I'm doing better than the majority of people, but I'm not there.
Can I ask you a question? When you made the statement that I'm doing okay at times, but I could be doing better.
Right.
Okay, so I got a couple of questions around that. One, are you talking about yourself specifically or the events and the situations in your life?
Well, about myself and my reaction.
Oh, your reaction.
Yeah,
okay.
Every morning I have conversations with God, but, you know, about myself and looking for help because I don't like how I behave.
Wow.
And it, you know, but again, it's part of life and all the things you put up with. You know, why I try to empower patients, not to be... See, the word victim or patient, is a better way of saying it. The word patient is derived from a submissive sufferer.
Oh.
That was the meaning of the word.
Oh.
Now, you know, if you're lying in the hospital and you're the submissive sufferer,
yeah,
and the nurse walks in and says, I have your medication,
uh-huh,
and she gives you the medication that's meant for the person in the next room, hey, she could kill you.
Right.
So,
right,
you know, what you should be saying is, what's the medication? I didn't know I was due to get anything now.
Yeah, that's right.
And then the nurse might say, oh, I'm sorry. It's, you know, so you want to be a person, personality, not, you know, a doctor, a patient, mm-hmm, a mother. But you want to be known in that way and also define yourself in that way. And so, yeah, I've been making noise my whole life,
right,
to be recognized when I don't like how I'm being treated.
Mm-hmm.
And there are times where I know I could be gentler with the noise, if you know what I mean.
Well, you know what? I think my wife would agree with you regarding the way I do things. So we might be... We might both have those tendencies. You know, we're not perfect. We try to do better,
yeah,
but we wish we could do better. But we're still spiritually minded, and we try to be kind and do all the things that are...
And I think that's where the sense of humor comes in.
Uh-huh.
You know, I can't believe I haven't mentioned it on this show before, but, you know, angry,
yeah,
raising hell in the kitchen, my wife will say to me, honey, you're so handsome when you're angry.
Right.
And boom. You,
yep,
know what I mean?
Lowers,
I'm laughing.
Right.
She's laughing.
Right.
She's, and we're okay again.
That's great. Well, I have another question for you. So in regards to doing better, I know for myself, listen, you know me, I've been happy for a long time, but that's not to say that life is perfect. And
right,
the situations I wake up to every day are unbelievable. You know that I'm working on a house that I bought. Mm-hmm. It's a 1950 house in Woodridge, Connecticut, and the contractor told me that I had a leak in in a fairly newly renovated room. It was an extension. It was only 6 years old, so you wouldn't think you'd have issues with that kind of thing. But he said to me there was water pouring in a window. So I went over there and I talked to one of the guys that was working. And I said, so where's the flood? And he says, which one? I said, I got more than one. He says, yeah, the basement's got water in it too. So, you know, it's times like that when you're really tested to say, hey, yeah, I'm happy, but that doesn't mean everything in my life is going perfectly. And it's really a question of how we react to it and what we do to solve our problems, right?
Yeah, but you see, what helps me then, I fell off the roof when a ladder broke.
I remember that.
You know,
I remember you telling about
it. I really said, I have no idea how I landed on my feet. Because the rung of the ladder broke. Why didn't I get tangled in the ladder? I mean, and my feeling was, that's my angel, that somebody took me and put me down on the ground past the ladder.
Right.
And so people know, I fell over and banged my head. I mean, but still, you know, it was nothing serious. I get up and okay.
Right.
And I said, I must have an angel. And one night, a guy came up to me after I had shared this story, and he said, yep, you have an angel, and I know his name. I said, what are you talking about? He said, what did you say when the ladder broke? I said, I yelled, O-S-H-I-T. And the guy said, that's your angel's name. But you see, that guy gave me a gift, again, of humor.
Right.
Because, like, you know, you say you have a leak. You know, you walk into the house, and, the pipe broke.
Yep.
So you yell, you know.
Right.
And then I start laughing. And he has saved me from injuries and a lot of things. And even our kids, because when I go through our basement, which part of it is very short, very low, because there must have been a lot of bone under the ground they couldn't dig down.
Right.
And I would bang my head on the drain pipes. And I was letting the dogs out so people understand. I'd go in the basement, open the door, and the dogs would all run out.
Yep.
But I'd bang my head and I'd yell, you know, S-H-I-D.
Right.
And the kids would be up in the kitchen above me and they'd say, Daddy is letting the dogs out. That was, they knew what I was doing because they'd hear me yell. But there are times I've slipped on with my bike on sheets of ice that I didn't recognize. And I'm flying through the air thinking I'm in big trouble. And I'm yelling again.
Right.
When I hit the ground, I was laughing. And I was so relaxed that I didn't break anything, injure anything.
Yeah, perfect.
And so that's why I say I'm so grateful to that guy for giving me that message. And I think that we have to, as hard as it is, you know, we'll get through the day.
You know, I had another question for you. And actually, you're tipping the scales with an answer towards that question that I haven't even asked you yet. And when you said you were so grateful to the angel and so forth, my other thought was this idea of maintaining they call it some kind of spiritual equilibrium in the world we live in, which can be rather trying at times, every day, in fact. I have found, and I know you, because you just said the word, gratitude, appreciation. I find that that's the counterbalance. You know, just like you're talking about an angel as a counterbalance for you, I find that when I appreciate what I have, in spite of what is giving me great difficulty, you know, the balance is turned. I have some sort of control there. I'm not a victim anymore. I'm taking more control over things. I think you're saying the same thing, aren't you?
Yeah. When, you know, on Facebook, somebody was asking, what are you grateful for? Hey, I woke up this morning.
Yeah. That's a good start.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And this, here's something yesterday. I have lots of calendars with, you know, quotes on each page. And I love reading that because it's the wisdom of so many others. And I always say my two favorites are Ann Animus and Arthur Unknown. You know? They always have some wonderful things to say.
That's funny.
But anyway, this was yesterday. Elizabeth Cooper Ross was an old friend of mine.
Yep.
And I loved her and just, you know, from her Jungian background to all the spirits and crazy things she would talk about that you learn aren't crazy. But this was from her and how she felt about people. People are like stained glass windows. They sparkle and shine when the sun is out. But when the darkness sets in, their true beauty is revealed only if there is a light from within. And I think that's what we're all talking about. When you're, you know, going through hell, can you have that inner light? Can you say, what am I learning here?
Mm-hmm.
Not, you know, oh, God damn it, look what's happened. Why is it? But what am I to learn? And another line I came across the other day is, if you meet a blind person, hold out your hand. But my thought is that we've all got trouble.
Right.
You know what I mean? So reach
sure.
out your hand to
sure.
each other. You know, it's not just blind people. We're all wounded. We're all blind in one way or another. But it just seemed like such a nice statement to reach out and take somebody's hand, help guide them.
But don't you think some people take their woundedness, a little too far, and they create a woundology science out of it, and everybody's got to know, and that's all they talk about? You know,
well,
I mean?
There are people, I called it Siegel sign. If a family came into my office, one person looked healthy, seven people looked, worn out and sick. I knew who had the illness, the person
right.
who looked well. And they were using it to gain
control.
Attention.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
It's no different in some ways from, being a bully,
Bernie, what you're saying is so important because in actuality, the illness for that person has a payoff, and that's the payoff,
that's kind of
love or control or manipulation or whatever it is they're gaining.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
I mean, what I would tell the family, because I'd listen to their stories, the family said, this particular woman, we've hired a nurse to be there at night because our sister keeps us up all night. But the woman said, but then we hired the nurse, and my sister comes into my bedroom and gets me up. Because the nurse is falling asleep, at 2 in the morning.
Yep.
And she won't wake the nurse up, she wakes her sister up.
So
I said, I'll tell you what I'll do. Watch. I said to the sick person, with a physical illness, I said, I can cure your problem. I'll get everything together and see you in 2 weeks, and we'll cure you. I said to the family, watch what happens now. She's not going to come back to the office. I want you to understand how she's manipulating you and using her illness. And sure enough, she never came back to the office again. But what was interesting, again, that I explained to the family, I'd get a phone call that she's in the emergency room, see? Because I don't have my treatment in the emergency room. So we'd have a visit in the emergency room. The family, some of them wake up and take care of themselves, and others still don't. They're feeling so guilty. But we have to, give people that love and help them not do it in an unhealthy way.
Right.
To enjoy
right.
their illness, but to get the love and not need the illness.
Absolutely. And that sounds... sounds simple, but it's not, because people have complicated ways of getting meaning in their life and love and everything else, and they don't have to go abuse people to get that. They can do it on a very normal basis, you would think.
That's why I'm always saying to people, how would you describe your experience? And then whatever words they came up with, whatever negative words they would come up with, I would say, what else in your life fits those words? Because you need to eliminate them.
Wow.
Heal yourself. And it is amazing. I don't know how I came up with it, but I think it may have been just listening to people, because when they say their diagnosis, I say, no, that's not what I'm interested in. What are you going through? Because I was trying to help them in their life. But then I could see a light in their eyes when they would use certain words, like draining, pressure, or even myself, when I had vertigo, I'd say, what's going on? I'd say, well, the world is spinning around. And I said to myself, yeah, dumbbell, you're doing too much.
Right.
So you have
right.
a symptom that makes you go to bed, and rest. And I thought, again, that was fascinating, because I'm talking to myself in the bedroom. I said, why don't you do what you keep telling your patients to do? You know what I mean? Instead of thinking, how am I going to fix this? Why is it happening? Okay, so I came up with those words. The world is spinning around. Yeah, thank you. And, then we can learn from our affliction, and you don't get so upset with them because they help
yes.
through your life.
Yeah. Yes, yes. Well, I found, your work very profound, especially in a very, I'm going to call it simple. It's not so simple to uncover this, but you did. And finding the reason that cancer may have happened to someone, and a look back around the time that they might have developed the cancer and what was going on in their life. And
right.
It's amazing how I've asked that question to people. And I remember one woman who said to me, when we traced back when she had the cancer and everything else, she ended up overcoming it, but when it first happened, she thought about it. She said, nothing was going on. Everything was fine, she said. And then she sort of walked away, and her husband was there. And he says to me, I don't believe she said that. And then he ended up telling me all the things that were going right. wrong with her at the time. So she didn't even remember. But it seems to always be there. There seems to be something that acts as a catalyst for an illness, or at least...
I mean, a lot of people would say, why are you blaming your patient?
Well, it's not about that.
What's going on in your life? And yeah, I said, I'm not blaming them. I'm trying to see why they're susceptible to certain... I mean, I saw this in our lives, my wife and myself. Mostly it was related to, which included twins, 5 kids, 7 years.
Yes.
And the two of us were exhausted, and I realized you got to get help because
yep.
you're getting sick,
yep.
you know, because you're all worn out. And
right.
I wasn't blaming,
right.
but it was looking at it. So, again, it's getting people to see why you may be susceptible at a certain time because your body chemistry has changed by your emotion.
Exactly.
So you're trying to
exactly.
see. And
yeah.
there's a question that everybody always answers correctly when you ask an audience. I have identical twin sisters. And one is a sweet little kid who makes mommy and daddy happy and internalizes all her feelings.
Oh.
And the other sister is a little devil who's driving everybody crazy. Who's like more likely to get breast cancer? And they always vote for the good kid. And, again, it's what is going on within that child. You know, if they're suppressing emotion, feeling, trying to make everybody else happy. I mean, nurses have a lot of problem with this simple question. You are asked to do something by a friend or family member, which you do not want to do. What would you tell them?
Uh-huh.
And 95% of nurses say, oh, I would go and do it.
Yeah.
Well, then you're saying no to yourself. So if you spend your life saying no to yourself, what's a good way to not have to go to work or do anything? But I'll get sick. You know, and your body does you a favor. Well, Monday
right.
morning is the prime example.
Mm-hmm.
We have more heart attacks, strokes, suicides, and illnesses on Monday morning. Why? Because what do people think when they get up? Oh, it's Monday.
Right. right.
You know, work, traffic. Yeah, but if you love what you're doing, well, this is a quote from the guy, George Halas. He owned the Chicago football Bears, you know, team, Bears, Chicago Bears. And one day, somebody who had left something in the office said he went back into the office on Sunday, and there's George sitting in his office.
Uh-huh.
And he was in his 80s at the time. The guy went over to him and said, George, at your age, what the hell are you doing working on Sunday? And his answer always stayed with, it's only work if there's someplace else you'd rather be.
That's great.
And that's a healthy choice. I always say, let your heart make up your mind. Because if, you want to do somebody a favor, you know, you want to reach out and take their hand and let something else go, fine. Mm-hmm. Then it's good for you. But when you want to say no, but
so let me ask you, Bernie, do you think it's right to put ourselves first? Let me ask you that question.
Yes, but not in a selfish way.
I agree. I agree with you.
In a life in hand, this is another way I put that. I place before you life and death, good and evil, choose life. Now, where this came from was a book that we have out called The Book of Miracles. As I was reading all these wonderful stories, I realized they happened to people, that it was no coincidence. You don't want to use the word miracle, you know?
Mm-hmm.
All these good things that happened were not coincidence. That they got themselves into that position because they were choosing to live in a life-enhancing way. What was not just good for them, but good for everyone else on the planet. So when they did that, then these so-called coincidence happened that in some cases saved their lives and, you know, in other cases were just mystical, incredible experiences that made such a big difference to them.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think a lot of people misunderstand putting yourself first. They immediately think of being selfish. In fact, they can be accused of that by their family, but if you don't take care of yourself, you end up letting someone else take care of you because you're not doing the job right.
Yeah, if you don't take care of yourself, you keep putting everybody else first.
Right.
You're hurting yourself.
Exactly.
I mean, see, that's where, like Monday morning, I mean, if you're always doing something for somebody else, what does your body say to you? Hey, I'll give you a break. All right? We'll have a heart attack. We'll get the flu. Then you can stay home and take it easy.
Right.
But if you make the right decision, then you feel good about your life, then your body says, okay, we're going to keep you going. Well, we'll get you.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny. I think of somebody I knew a long time ago, and he had said to me that every year he ends up in a hospital, and then he says to me, you know, for one situation or another, and he wasn't really that old, and then he says to me, it's a vacation. It's my vacation. I mean, it actually probably is.
Yeah.
I mean, that's his way of getting out of whatever situation he's creating.
Yeah, and, you know, it's a nice term if we could put it to life. You know, if we could ever see life as a vacation, that would be incredible. You know, instead of
I like words, that.
Yeah.
I like that a lot.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I happen to think that when you're happy, every day can be a vacation, actually.
That's, you know, that's a great state.
Well, you know, happiness is not just the do-good, feel-good
yeah.
statement that most people think
well,
it is.
I think it includes the gratitude.
Exactly.
You know, the happy to have a life.
Yeah, but it also includes doing good to others, kindness, compassion.
Well, the opportunity, yeah.
Yeah. Well, it looks like we're coming up on a short break, and when we come back, Bernie, maybe we can discuss some aspects of prayer and how valuable and
right.
productive, and you know, and how real that can be for all of us. So
okay.
Stay tuned.
Like what you hear? Tell your friends. Thanks for listening to HRNRadio.com.
Okay, we're back with Dr. Bernie Siegel and myself, Lionel Ketchian. And Bernie, let's talk about prayer, the power of prayer. Does prayer work? Can it work?
Yeah. It works for a reason. But first, let me say this, and I can't remember where I find all these things, but, you know, I'm reading so much. But it said there are two kinds of prayer. And it reminded me of patients that I've taken care of. It said one is where you, in a sense, see the prayer bringing you what you realize can happen. See? It's like Ernest Holmes saying, what if Jesus was the only normal person who ever lived? So it opens up your potential. Prayer that says, I can be cured of my disease, I can, you know, have a wonderful life, etc. The other was argumentative, where you argue with God. See, why are you putting me through this? What the hell's going on here? Why did you do this? I want you to fix everything. And I thought it was just interesting coming across that, because
I
used to tend to, you know, argue with God. Why'd you make a world like this? What's the point of it? Because as a doctor, it's like all this suffering, what's happening?
Right.
I've calmed down, and now I just allow God to come in and help with everything. Mm-hmm. But what I saw with my patients was fascinating, how it really connected with this. One was a lady who was quite ill, and, you know, she was at a point with I'd rather be dead than be going through all this. And she said to me, well, let me just say that her disease completely resolved and healed. And I was amazed. See? And she said to me one day, do you want to know why it happened? I said, yeah, what happened?
Uh-huh.
She said, I went to bed one night, sitting on the bed, and I started talking to God. Said, I'm fed up. I can't take it anymore. There's no reason for you to keep putting me through all this suffering, and I either want to be dead tonight or I want to wake up well. Now, you do one or the other. That's what she told God. You either take my life tonight so I can have some peace, or I get up and I'm healthy. And that's when she said I got well. But, and she spent a lot of time, I felt, getting out her anger, yelling at God.
Yes.
You know, and that help bring her peace.
Absolutely.
Then the other was a lady who had a large pancreatic tumor that you could feel, and it wasn't responding to treatment. She said, okay, enough. I'm going to go home to die, you know, to enjoy the last few months of my life
right.
and die. And a few months later, she showed up, and one of my partners opened the door to the examining room because he was seeing her. And he said, hey, Barney, come in here. You're interested in this stuff. You know, like I'm the nutcase thing. So I come in, and he said, her tumor is gone.
Wow.
You can't feel anything. There's nothing there. I said to her, tell them what you did. She said, you know.
Yeah.
I said, yeah, I know, but tell them.
Right.
She said, I went home, and I left my troubles to God.
Love that.
Never, I mean, think about that, that you have cancer, and you go home and say, all right, God, here's my problem, it's yours. And I think the total peace that that brought her, again, changed her body, her chemistry, and, you know, it's like her body wakes up and says, okay, you want to live, you want peace, we'll help you.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and, you know, sometimes letting go is allowing peace. It's there.
Yeah.
And how do you get the peace in the first place? You get all the junk out, and there you go. There it is. It isn't something you get. It's something you have that's been dusted over, and you can't see it anymore.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny. You are so in tune, maybe the two of us, with one another. You, of all the people on Earth, you go and mention a name, and I was going to bring it up, and I had a reason to bring it up, and you brought it up first. So this is very interesting. And again, there are no coincidences, right?
Which
you bring
name?
You bring up Ernest Holm. And we've talked about him before. We both have a lot of respect for him. He's the creator of the science of mind.
Right.
But anyway, I have a book called Love and the Law. It's a book that was published, his unpublished teaching. It's a very, very good book about healing. And it's just an incredible book. It was published in 2001. I ended up ordering a copy for you, so you're going to have a present from me coming. But the interesting thing is it is an actual how-to pray, or at least his version. You can add, subtract, embellish. But here's one little quote from it that I thought is pretty powerful. Through the power of his own word, I mean, that's the middle of a sentence, but through the power of our own word, he's saying, you and I must cease looking outside ourselves to any person, any place, or anything, and we ultimately must at least realize that whatever truth or power we have must flow through us. And when we begin to interpret our own human nature, we shall begin to understand God and law and life, and not until then. So I think it reminds me of the idea that a stained glass window, when the sun goes down, needs to be lit from within. And I think this is the case with prayer. When we have that light within us and it radiates out, that can have an awesome power. But what it's doing is it's connecting with the energy and the force of the universe.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, when we say we are made the image of God, my feeling is, absolutely, how could we say not? But that we're not talking about that God looks like a person.
Right.
What I'm talking about is what makes us, you know, our genes, our inner chemistry, ourselves.
Absolutely.
My definition, literally, of God is loving, intelligent, conscious energy.
Perfect.
So, you know, the thinking, the resources, all those things are available to God and the process of creation. And the same is true in us.
Yes.
See, one of the other things, that's why I like Ernest Holmes in the sense that he speaks, you know, that's why science of mind. I mean, he can put religion and science together.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
And look for the benefits of each. And one of the things I was talking about recently was, the religions who see God as giving you an illness, okay?
Uh-huh.
And this includes Billy Graham saying
that
God might use cancer to bring you back to church, and the Pope in the 1800s saying don't get vaccinated because God decides who gets smallpox.
Yes.
And he said then doctors shouldn't be treating diseases.
Right.
You see, but then people say, wait a minute, that's crazy. Yeah, right. It's crazy to think God is giving you a disease, and then you go to the doctor to cure it.
Right.
If God has given it to you, then you ought to say, all right, God, take it away. I'll change myself.
Yeah.
You know, but to stop thinking that you're being punished by a disease. When we get back, let me get into that punishment aspect.
That sounds perfect, and we've got more to talk about, so stay tuned.
Like what you hear? Tell your friends. Thanks for listening to HRNradio.com.
Okay, we're back. Healthy living, healthy life, I should say. I'm Lionel Ketchian with Dr. Bernie Siegel. So, Bernie, you wanted to bring up some things about prayer when we came back.
I remember what it was. That it had to do more with, you know, disease. If God is causing this and giving you disease, all kinds of trouble. And what helped me, because as I began to realize, I didn't know other people's religion, and I could see that some were embedded with guilt, shame, and blame. You know,
yes.
I'm a sinner, so look what God did to me, and that sort of stuff.
Right.
And so my question to people would be, see, like to Billy Graham, if he said God may have used cancer, and he and I were standing in the street, and he put his hand in his pocket and said, oh, my God, I can't find my car keys. They're out of my pocket. I said, well, then God must want you to walk home. And if he said, yeah, I guess you're right, and he walked home,
right.
I'd say he's living the sermon. See, so I'm not upset with him for what he's preaching.
Right.
But if he said, Bernie, don't be crazy. Let's go back in the office. I probably left my keys at my desk.
Yeah.
All right. So you're going to look for what you lost. And the philosopher Maimonides, thousand or so years ago, said, disease is a loss of health. So the Bible tells us if you find what your neighbor lost, return it to him. And I think that's the way we as physicians should also look at it. Your health. I'm glad you came here. I'm going to help you find it again. You know, it's not about guilt, blame, shame, what did I do wrong?
Right.
But let us find what you've lost.
So let's say you're not a physician and you can't help somebody because you're not a physician. How much do you think prayer can help somebody if you want to help them find something they lost?
Well, two things. I'd say to help them to love themselves. Because I have one other quote from Maimonides. If people, and what bothered me about this was how little life has changed. Because he said this 1,000 or so years ago. If people took as good care of themselves as they do their animals, they'd suffer fewer illnesses. So, again, it's to get people, I always say, love yourself, love your life.
Mm-hmm.
God is a resource, you know, so that, the prayer can connect you with God. I found a little booklet that came with tapes that I no longer have, but it's 24 or more spiritual songs. It's entitled, I can't think of the name of the booklet, but it'll come to me.
Okay.
But anyway, it's one song after another connecting you with God. You know, it's, I am weak, but thou art strong, all kinds of things. And Jesus loves me, this I know. It's just, you sing those, and I literally do that as part of, like, our morning meditation. Go through several of the songs and the lyrics. Oh, it's called How Great Thou Art. That's the name of the book. But just think of that. How great thou art.
Right.
You know, instead of feeling bad about yourself, say, hey, how great thou art. And this really happened to me. I go into trance. I'm jogging down the road in the morning, getting exercise, singing.
Uh-huh.
I am strong, but thou art weak. Okay? And I heard a voice say, you have the words wrong.
Right.
And then I heard myself singing, I am strong, but thou art weak. It should be, I am weak, but thou art strong.
Right, right.
You know, keep me, Jesus, from all wrong. But then I heard the voice say to me, you know something, Bernie? I've done a good job with you, so it's okay. Keep singing. Now, you know, I mean it. That when I say I hear that voice, it's not me making it up. It's like somebody's talking to me.
Yeah.
And it was such a wonderful gift. But I've done a good job with you. Go ahead. But I don't even, you know, but I know I was in a trance, or I wouldn't be singing the wrong lyric.
Well, you know, I think two of the most important things for humans, and we do them with other people, is connection and conversation. You know, and who's to say we can't do that with God? You know, if we think we can't, then we can't. But if we allow ourselves to open up a connection and conversation, I think it can certainly happen.
Key,
in fact, I think that's what prayer is really about.
Yeah, the key that I've learned, and prayer helps you do it, and the reason I say that I have learned, this is from people who communicate with animals, from mystics,
right,
spiritual leaders. There's one key fact, and in myths and fairy tales too. When do you know the truth? When can you hear the voice? It's when your mind is quiet, what I call the still pond. Because the ugly duckling sees he's a swan looking down at the water. But, see, he didn't carry bitterness towards his mother who rejected him. Because I have a quote from a woman that she'll never be a swan. These are her words.
Yes.
Her mother's words were eating away at me and maybe gave me cancer.
Uh-huh.
Dressed me in dark clothes so nobody would ever notice me and told me I embarrassed her and was a failure. Now, she's spending her life bitter and resentful and indeed had to get cancer to wake up and start living, change
wow.
her life. And, you see, but as long as she was living that bitterness towards her mother, she never sees herself or her beauty. And that's where I think prayer can come in, letting go of the past. I mean, there are a lot of words you could use to describe
yeah, sure,
this.
Sure.
But you empty your mind. And I found the best way of helping other people is to listen to them. You know, it's like we talked about. To a blind person, you give them their hand.
Yep.
But to somebody who isn't blind, you give them your ears. I mean that literally. Don't tell them what to do. Don't say, read Bernie's book. Listen to his program. Just listen to them and say, mm-hmm, yes, oh, uh-huh. And let them keep talking. And then they empty out all the stuff. Then they say to you, thank you, you've been an enormous help. I mean, I've had people say that to me when I haven't said a word in an hour and a half. Yo, this is the greatest conversation. This is the quote.
Yeah.
This is the greatest conversation I've ever had with anyone. And I never said a word that
way. Wow, wow.
But she was talking to herself. And I tell people, test it on your family. You know, somebody in your family comes in and says, I got a problem. All right, this is what you need to do.
Yes,
and then they say, you're no help. But
yeah.
then you, next time they come in, say, what is it? And at the end of the time, they say, thank you, you've been an enormous help, and you haven't said anything. So I'd say just remember.
Yeah, that's really good. I guess you're giving them the space to feel connected to you and trust you.
Yeah, like
and
keeping your journal in
yeah.
a sense. Get in touch with what's within.
So it takes a very special person to be able to do that, you know, to be quiet enough to allow someone else to speak. You know, most of us think we have all the answers.
Yeah, you got to choke off the, you know, all the emotions. Because I would see it more with learning to communicate with my animal. And what I mean by that is if one of them disappeared and I start screaming their name, I would always hear my friend Amelia say, Bernie, quiet your mind. You'll know where your animal is. And it's true. And to me. And, you know, that should be the only
when you need a positive point of view, turn to HealthyLife.net, your 24/7 radio network for a better future.
Okay, we're back to Healthy Life with Dr. Bernie Siegel and myself, Lionel Ketchian. Bernie, you reminded me that you had something on Facebook. Let's talk about that.
Oh, yeah. You know, my sense of humor gets me into a lot of trouble. Because I feel safe and secure, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And therefore can laugh at things that people may say about me or to me. And my wife did stand-up one-liner comedy. And I put this on Facebook. It said, I was depressed this morning, so I called suicide prevention hotline, and they put me on hold.
Okay.
Now, to me, that's a joke. You know,
yes.
suicide prevention is going to put you on hold.
Yes.
But the response was incredible. you know, that people were worried about me. Was I really depressed? Was I really thinking of suicide? Well, they've had it happen in their family. You know, and I said, hey, folks, it's a joke. And then a lot of people got mad at me. It's
right.
Not funny. You don't know
right.
what I've been through.
Right, right.
But I have to add, you see, I should have put in all the lines. This came to, that my wife put together. I called suicide prevention. They put me on hold. I called the Missing Persons Bureau. They told me to get lost. I call my answering service, and they don't answer.
Now, that's
but
funny.
I went to a psychiatrist, and I said, nobody pays attention to me anymore, and he said, next patient, please.
Yeah, see, now that's really funny.
Yeah, see, so when you put them together, but I thought people would laugh.
Yeah.
You know, because I would at these crazy lines. But I keep learning that the wounded don't laugh.
Right.
They weren't brought up the way I was. So they can't see it as funny because of the pain that they have. And believe me, I've gotten in trouble with neighbors when I put funny notes in their mailboxes.
Oh, boy.
You know, and then they come banging on the door saying, what is this about? Why are you doing this?
Uh-huh.
And this is things like, you know, they have a kid who plays the drums, and so did we. And I said, hey, I love hearing your son play the drums. Then I leave a note saying, you're violating the zoning laws with your son playing the drums. Or somebody had a bunch of chickens who were cackling, and I said, you know, again, you're making too much noise.
Uh-huh.
And one of our kids has a yard full of chickens making the same noises. So
yeah,
I thought these people would laugh, you know, saying
right.
you're violating zoning, you have to pay a penalty so we can improve our home and diminish sound effects. You know, to me, I would have read it and laughed like hell.
Yep.
But they're knocking on the door saying, what are you talking about? What's going on here? And I said, I'm kidding. But, you know, and I've even seen that with some of the medical students because they would be working with me. They'd spend a month with me. And I mean, really, like glued to my side. So they saw me as a human being, as a doc. And people would say, why is that student with you all the time? And I'd say, oh, he's not doing very well and he needs a lot of help. So he's spending a month. And I remember one of the young men came over to me. He said, I can't deal with this. Please don't say that. And I realized his life, his parents, whatever went on, I had brought up a lot of pain for him.
Sure.
You know, like that woman hearing, you embarrass me, you're a failure. And I had to learn that, and I'm still learning, because, you know, my sense of humor will sometimes pop up, and then people will not think it's funny because of what it brings up to them in their life.
So let me ask you a question, Bernie. You're not going to change your sense of humor.
No. No, but I'll have to be careful
okay.
in the sense of who you're sharing it with and, you know, making clear to them you're kidding.
Right.
See, I had a woman who lost her sight, a young woman. She was helping me in the office. Because, again, she's wounded. She can help cancer patients and others deal with their wounds.
Right.
So her name is Julie. And so she is blind due to diabetes. She'd lost sight as a young woman.
Oh.
And we'd be walking down the street. And if you're walking with a blind person, you have to warn them if something's ahead of you. So I would say step, meaning there's a flight of steps in front of us.
Right.
And she'd start raising her feet to land on the step. And it looked bizarre because then it was almost like the Gestapo, you know what I mean? Walking down with your legs
right.
up in the air.
Right, right.
And then she'd burst out laughing, realizing I was teasing her,
oh,
you
boy.
Know, and I would do things like that. And but the people on the street would look at me like, oh, that. Oh, man, what's he doing to her? But it would get her to laugh, you know,
exactly.
all the time.
Exactly.
And she had that sense of joy and spirit. And I have to add one more thing, because I'm always dealing with drawings and symbols. She made up a card for herself in purple, is a spiritual color.
Right.
And put a butterfly in the upper left corner, which is where the death concept is. Unconsciously, when people do drawings, the far future or death concept is in that quadrant.
I see.
And she put the purple butterfly. And I just looked at the card and thought it was so pretty. But the butterfly is a symbol of transformation and of death, too. And you know, the caterpillar becoming the butterfly.
Right.
And she died 2 weeks after making that part.
All right, so I have to ask you again. It was in the upper left
corner? Upper left corner, yeah.
Upper left.
And
was it a purple? You said a purple
butterfly?
Yes,
a purple butterfly. I looked at that. I realized she was telling me, I'm going.
Wow.
But I didn't interpret the card. I would if she had done a drawing, you know what I mean? Then I would have looked at it a different way.
I see.
But I knew she was going and was telling me that symbol.
Well, if you were able to make her laugh like that, was she a happy person? Was she?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
It was a pleasure to be with.
Wow, that's incredible.
Well,
that person,
just, as I say, I've never forgotten her. You know,
right.
All the years, because we're talking back 30 or 40 years we worked together.
And you want to know something? This humorous interaction, even though you're pulling, you know, some might say pranks on her, you guys were connecting. And,
oh, yeah.
And that was a beautiful level of connection, a trust as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't see anything wrong with it. I think that's the beauty that lives on today in both of
you. She didn't have any trouble, you know, making fun of me and getting me to laugh.
I love it. Yeah, I love it. Yeah, I mean, you could have told her, can't you see it my way, right? Things like that.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, some people aren't made to take jokes like that, and some people are.
Yeah, I mean, if you know love is involved, it's hard to be offensive.
I love it.
I mean, let me give you one more.
All right, that'll be something to close on.
Now we can close, because I said to my wife, I hope someday to provide you with a husband that you need. And should have. And she said, oh, you're looking for another guy for me?
Perfect. That is funny.
Yeah.
That is great. Bernie, I wish we had more time together. That was a lot of fun. Thank
All
you
right.
very much, Bernie.
We'll be back.
Okay, we'll be back. All right. Have a good one, everybody.